From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hodags, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils. So keep it tuned right here. This hour, more freeform. And that's not bad when you've got people like investigator Shelley Wright, publisher Phyllis Scaldi of Fate Magazine, and Sam the Animal Steele producing and adding color commentary as necessary. And I'm Vance Pollock. I said that, didn't I? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I am Vance Pollock. I'm pretty sure. Last time I checked, I was.
Formerly.
Oh, no. Some
Joshua
people.
P. Warren.
Yeah.
Formerly Joshua P. Warren. No, I'm indeed a distinct person. Not just a distinct personality in the same carcass, but Joshua P. Warren and I can exist in the same room in separate. We have separate corporeal bodies. Is that clear enough? Yeah. Josh and I are not the same person. Someone came in and accused Josh of just changing his name to Vance Pollock recently. That didn't happen. Joshua P. Warren just escaped to Puerto Rico, where he is kicking up his heels in Boca Raton, and he's left us lackeys here to manage things. Speaking of strange, got a problem? Take it up with the boss. In Puerto Rico. Shelley, you and Phyllis have been chatting a little bit. You guys are hitting it off. This is great. This is what I knew, that when this is the first time you've met. Actually, just a couple hours ago is the first time you and I have met, Phyllis. But
correct. Yep.
Felt like I had known you forever the first time I talked to you, because I had heard Micah, evil Micah, talk so much about Phyllis. And, of course, I knew Fate Magazine. Let's go back a couple decades and pick up where your personal connection to Fate Magazine took place. Well, let's go back to your earliest recollection of Fate Magazine and then fast forward to when you became associated with the magazine. So, earliest memory of Fate Magazine.
Well, I probably read it when I was very young, but I was working for Llewellyn Publications in St. Paul in the late 80s, and Carl Weske, the owner, decided he wanted to buy Fate from the Fullers in Chicago, which he did. So they transferred everything up to St. Paul, and I was working as an editor for the book part of the Llewellyn. And then I asked if I could be an editor, if I could write for Fate. It's just right away I had this incredible attraction and longing to be part of it. So Donald Michael Craig, who was the editor, then he allowed me to write a few articles, and I just fell in love. And then I asked if I could be an editor. Of course, the editor does all the work, and Donald Michael Craig could prance around the office and as the editor-in-chief and make me do all the work. But it was great training. And then in the early 90s, they wanted to sell Fate. And at that time, I had stopped working for Llewellyn and started my own book publishing company. And they called me back to help out with the transition of selling Fate. And I said, me, sell Fate to me. So David Godwin, my partner, and I inherited Fate, and such has been my future.
You've got many a story to tell about David, as a matter of fact. David, who is no longer with us in physical form, continues to play a close role in your personal affairs. He's right there with you in spirit.
Very much so, yes. David was the managing editor, and of course he did all the work, and I get to have all the fun. But he died, I guess it'll be 4 years ago this fall. But he appeared very shortly after he passed, and I got an unasked-for email from Janice Carlson, an incredible medium in the cities, and she asked if I would like to have a column written by David information through her. She's not really a channeler. Excuse me. She's a medium. So she was able to hear what David was saying. So I decided, yes, that would be wonderful. So every issue of fate is questions and answers from the amazing Godwin. He's still writing his column in spirit. And it's just amazing the things he comes up with.
You mentioned as we were having dinner a little bit earlier, and it was kind of a restful way that he made his passing. You were talking about you had just been out for a nice walk the evening before, and he sat down with his headphones on listening to some music, and when you had found him, he was just gone that quick. And we were
That's right. Yeah.
We were talking about how with a lot of people suffering and declining health and prolonged illness, bedridden for months, years in some cases. What a sad way to go that David left us really suddenly.
Unexpectedly and suddenly, yes. I went in the bedroom to tell him, turn off your light or shut your door, because I had a girlfriend staying there sleeping out on the couch. And I, touched him and he was cold. I'm like, holy goodness, what's going on? Yeah, he was gone. And we called the paramedics and all that. And it was just a nightmare of the whole evening because it was so unexpected. And I was in shock. And finally, the paramedics took him away in a van. That's their hearse nowadays. But anyway, I could clairvoyantly see him swooping along on top of the van. He was already awake. I suppose he's like, what the heck? That's my body in there. And then the next morning, I was sleep deprived. I was so exhausted and stressed out. Of course, then I had to take the dogs out for a walk outside in the woods because they had to do their business no matter what. And I kept hearing the word Thelema, Thelema, Thelema in my head. Of course, that's Aleister Crowley's System of Magic. Well, that was the password to get on David's computer. Otherwise, all the business would have been lost. But he, right away, he was awake. It was like right on top of my left side of my head, Thelema, Thelema. He kept repeating it so I would hear it. So I went in and got on his computer, and then I was able to access all our information. So, yeah, the next morning he was already awake in spirit and right there communicating with me. It was pretty
And
great.
Helping you yeah. make the transition to conduct business.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, we would have been lost because everything was locked up with his password.
Oh, my goodness. What about that story? This is an evening with Phyllis Galdi of Fate Magazine. For you folks who haven't caught the announcement tonight, and we have mentioned it a couple of times, because this is no spur-of-the-moment decision. You've been looking at Western North Carolina for some time now.
I've been looking all over the country to relocate Fate, because Minnesota, everybody, all my friends are either dead or gone or moved away. I really don't have any connection or help. So I looked at California. David said I could not move to California. He says there's going to be firequakes, there's going to be tsunamis in my lifetime. He said, do not. He told the medium. Sometimes I hear him directly myself. And in this instance, he told Janice Carlson, do not move to California. It won't be safe. And then I thought about Arizona, New Mexico, and he says, there's no water down there. I thought about Florida. No, that was no-go. And I, East Coast, people wanted me to move there. But North Carolina was acceptable because it's going to be a safe place to live.
Wow. I think a lot of people kind of follow the ley lines, so
yes.
to speak, to North Carolina. Joshua P. Warren also often speaks about this latitude and the connection of sacred spaces along mm-hmm. this latitude. Of course, the Brown Mountain Lights are close neighbors. We've got to get you down there, Phyllis, to mm-hmm. look for the mystery lights at Linville Gorge and Brown Mountain, one of the most sacred places that I know in the area. Kindly spirits. That's fascinating. I was telling the story a couple weeks ago that I thought I had received a sign from my grandfather when I returned to work, and the first thing the manager did for me, my manager will do this for me because he knows that I'm a coin buff. And Shelley grew up in a coin shop family. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Wright's Coin Shop. Regular listeners know, of course, about Wright's Coin Shop. That's Shelley's family business and right next door to Nevermore out there, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. But my friend at work, my boss, knows that I'm a coin collector. Not high-end stuff, but he knows that I collect peculiar things. And he saves wheat pennies for me, okay? So they're, like I say, a very, very basic, very pedestrian coin collector here. But he'll save wheat pennies for me. And I came in the door, and he said, "The universe knew you were coming back." I had just got back from vacation. I'd been in Iceland for nearly a month. And I came in, and he pulled out one of these steel 1943 war pennies. There was 1 year that they didn't make the pennies out of copper. They made them out of steel, and he gave me one of these. And my grandfather saved these. He said, "I broke a roll of pennies not 5 minutes ago and found one of these." I don't know when I've seen one of those in circulation. I don't think I've ever got one of those in circulation.
People usually pull them out.
Oh, yeah, because they're unique. I mean, they're noticeable. Mm-hmm. This is special. You find wheat pennies because if you don't look at the back of them, even silver coins, silver dimes, silver quarters, you can hear the sound of when you drop a silver dime or a silver quarter in the register. You can hear that ring. Mm-hmm. But wheat pennies, they're the same until you look at the back of them. I can tell from looking at the head side of a penny sometime, if the patina is right, I'll say, "I bet that's a wheat penny," and flip it over, and it is. Psychometry at work. But I thought my grandfather was looking out for me, just sending me a sign like, welcome back to these mountains, because these mountains were his home, and I had been away, and these are my roots, and I felt like he was sending me a sign. I've often spoken about my grandmother. Here's one that I haven't told on the show before. Actually, we're coming up on a break, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some familiar spirits a little bit. Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine has opened up a little bit about David and the close watch that he gives over Fate's business, even from the other side. I'm going to tell another one about my grandmother. I've told some of my grandma stories here before, but I think I've got one that I feel like I should share tonight in the presence of friends. We'll be right back. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange.
Body that lost the chase, swung from the hanging tree. Despite the pleas of desperate men, it was easy to foresee. When the hound stopped running, the conclusion was foregone. Never was one that could break away from the hounds of Sheriff John. Old Joe took the lead and on a scent he could not track. Those who tried to get away found no turning back. They began to shake and sweat, and their hearts began to pound when they heard Sheriff John's pack of howling hounds. And the hounds of Sheriff John set loose upon the trail. They always found their man. Was it justice that prevailed? Listen close about the time of the waning of the day. You may hear the hounds of Sheriff John begin to howl and bay. When a gentle hand from high above took the one that he had wed, so Sheriff John was gone, and he may as well be dead. Pearl and a pistol could put on man to all his grief and pain. So on a cold and dark winter's day, he shot a bullet in his brain. And the
Sheriff John would set loose upon the trail. They always found their men, or was it justice that prevailed? Listen close about the time of the waning of the day. You may hear them, Sheriff John, in Talon Bay.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. That's the Hounds of Sheriff John, Sheriff John Lyerly, specifically. Shelley and I know a little bit about Sheriff John. The Scatterlings, local Americana group, their first CD, self-titled The Scatterlings, is out, and The Hounds of Sheriff John is on there. My buddy Rick Russell writing that one, and it kind of makes you wonder, some of these old folk songs whose authors are lost, were they collaborative efforts? Did different people provide different elements, different details, different pieces of the puzzle so that the songs as we know them today, you know, a couple hundred years later, no one person is responsible. Maybe the melody is the same, but traditional songs. And Rick is a fan of local history and folklore and things like that, so he's trying to write music in this tradition, I believe, in this vein that taps into local lore, and I'm proud to have provided Rick with this story. Sheriff John Lyerly committed suicide here in Asheville in 1924, and his story was largely forgotten until a few years ago when a friend of ours literally bumped into his spirit, and I found out about the suicide in that place. Yeah, very, very fascinating stuff. I promised listeners that I would throw in a familiar spirit tale. Here's one about my grandmother. You've probably heard me tell about sitting in the house where the door to the bedroom where she had stayed when she was living with us now had a bookcase in front of it and a desk on the other side in the bedroom, but I sat alone in that house with the doors locked late one night reading a book and heard something rattling and looked up and saw the doorknob turning very deliberately, very consciously. Like I say, not like when a plane would break the sound barrier. It was not uncommon for a quake or a sonic boom to rattle the house and the windows a little bit. It was nothing like that. Everything else was still, but I looked across the room and saw that doorknob turning back and forth, and immediately thought of my grandmother. That would have been the door she used to get from the bedroom out to the living room when she was staying with my parents, probably before I was born. She had some heart troubles towards the end. The story I want to draw out now also bears on omens or folklore to a degree. You see, in the old days, it was kind of a haunted sound when you knew that someone in the neighborhood was dead or dying, and you would hear that hammering carrying. You would know that someone was building the casket. Sometimes people would be laying on their deathbed listening to the sound of someone build their casket. And this lonesome sound of the hammer rapping across the fields as they build the pine box to bury you in. When my grandmother was very ill and staying with my aunt just across the street, she was laying in a back room on her deathbed. She did rally. She recovered from this, but at the time they didn't know how long she would last. She was basically in a coma in that bed, very low. They didn't expect her to even last through the night. The doctor had been there and checked her out and said, oh, her pulse is very weak. There's not much we can do but wait. And so there was my grandmother on what they thought was her deathbed, laying in the back room at my aunt's house. And suddenly my aunt hears this knocking sound. And she goes to check and see what it is. And you might think maybe it's the plumbing of some pipes or something making some noise, but the soffit, that is in the ceiling, in the corner of that room is where this knocking, this echoing was coming from. There were no pipes up there. There was nothing up there. It was just solid cement block up there in the corner of that room. But she could stand there and pinpoint that this knocking sound was coming from the corner of that room opposite of where my grandmother was laying and unconscious in this bed. And so she went and got my cousin Bobby and called him back, said, "Come in here and tell me what you notice." And he stood there in the room where his grandmother was, and he heard this knocking, and he said, "What is that knocking sound?" And she says, "You tell me, where do you think that's coming from?" And he said, "It's coming from right up there in the corner of this room." And so he went and got my Uncle Bob, pulled Uncle Bob, Dad, come in here and Grandma's room. What is this? What's going on? And he stood there and puzzled and said, "There's a knocking sound. Sounds like hammering coming from up in the corner of that room." And he's the first one, I think, to ask, "What is that?" And my aunt said, "Mom's doing that with her mind. She knows she's dying, and that's the sound of someone building her coffin." My grandmother had this strange, she was fey. She had one foot on the other side for years since she was a young woman. She lost her brother during the flu pandemic in 1917, 1918. More people died of the Spanish influenza than the actual combat during World War II. The war spread the flu. Thoughts on that? Phyllis?
No, just World War One.
World War One. You're right. Right. World War One. The Great War. The war to end all wars for 20 years. Not quite 20 years. But right. Yeah. World War One. More deaths attributed to Spanish influenza in the years surrounding the war than actual combat deaths. Horrible. And my grandmother lost her brother, Uncle Walter, and Uncle Walter always came back and let her know when someone in the family was going to die, so that you couldn't call her up to let her know that someone had died that she didn't already know. Uncle Walter had been there. And that was proven, because she would ask sometimes before people could tell her. People would show up and she would say, "Yeah, I know this one died," and they hadn't even opened their mouth. They hadn't even said a word about it. So she had this, what they call fey. Are you familiar with that term, fey, Phyllis?
Yes. Oh, yes. Second sight.
Yeah. Yeah. We mentioned sort of genetic makeup or racial or ethnic background being associated with certain phenomena. Have you found that fey is something associated with Scotch or Scots-Irish or people from a certain part of the world, or is it pretty common across?
I think every culture has it, that they're it's called by different things.
Right.
The Native Americans, the shamans, they were very, very intuitive. The Aborigines were, the Hawaiians. I mean, every culture has its intuitive side.
Okay.
Unfortunately, our capitalistic environment has tried to deny that in all of us. I've known many young children see spirits, and they see their guardian angels, they see their totem wolf, and parents say, "Oh, you're crazy, nothing." So we shut it down in our culture. We squelch all that intuitive sight and understanding, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point, though. It's known by different names or described in different ways in various cultures, languages around the world, but every culture, at least the more primal, the more nature-based cultures, recognized mm-hmm. the value of this. In Scandinavia, I'm familiar with these things. I cite these examples because I'm familiar with them. The Norse and the Scandinavian legends, and even to this day, people who are very attuned to nature spirits and psychic powers and everything like this. When you associate with them or find yourself acquainted with them very closely, very personally, when it's in the family, it's hard to deny it. It's maybe it's not too hard to accuse Grandma of being a little bit crazy, but yeah, My grandma was special. She wasn't crazy. She was just special. We'll be right back. It's Speaking of Strange. Taking you down some dark roads on Speaking of Strange. Maybe not the darkest roads. Sometimes there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes there's a silver lining. I do like dark stuff. I'm a Halloween kid, and I've been having this conversation with parents and teachers in the last couple of years, and I've come up with this. I mean, it's not a stretch. It's not by any means an original idea, but I think that kids, and it was true of me, I wasn't real conscious of it at the time, but they kind of associate with the closest holiday to their birthday. I mean, I remember having Halloween themed birthday parties when I was a little kid, because I'm born on the 23rd. And then Halloween's the next week. Josh is born, what, the 25th?
25th.
And so Joshua P. Warren is a Halloween kid.
I always had Halloween cakes.
When's your birthday, Shell?
November 3rd, as his mom.
Okay. So, yeah, Halloween kids. Yeah.
My birthday's April 15th, the day Lincoln died. What kind of birthday could I have had?
Lincoln's death day, huh?
Wow. And tax day.
It's Easter sometimes, though, right? Sylvan, I've got a Sylvan's is the 14th. Yeah, my son, my oldest, his is the 14th, and we think of him as the newborn Messiah. No, no emails from the people who take that as
gospel,
some sort of heresy. That I would say. No. We think of him as an Easter baby. Yeah, he does like his sweets. He does like a basket full of candy. So there you go. What do you think of that? Associated with what's the closest holiday to your birthday, Sam? See
I'm
if this theory.
June 21st. I'm a summer solstice.
Summer solstice. Darn right. But you maybe didn't celebrate the solstice in your family when you were a kid. Were you more of a 4th of July kid? Was that a holiday that you associated with?
I am a bicentennial with? Baby.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I guess it was just the first day of summer. I mean, not summer solstice in our family, but it was the first day of summer.
But you are just a couple weeks old on the bicentennial. Huh? Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
1976, baby.
That's why you're so patriotic. That's why Sam is a flag-waving red, white, and blue All-American boy.
I have a All-American pretty bad visor at the house. So I was going to...
He's still hitting the bins, in
scoring.
Case you folks don't know. Hey, the last time we talked about my grandpa's name is Art.
Yeah.
It got preempted by a ball game. Do you realize that?
Yeah. What?
Maybe that's why it never sold anything.
We did a whole segment. We did a whole segment talking about your Etsy page.
It was a good page. And I really did renew those things because I noticed it last night. I was like, oh, all my listings are dead.
The listings aren't okay.
Yeah. But I did sell a Donny Osmond doll, though. It was pretty sweet.
But if you did repop those things, it would still be my grandpa's name is Art.
That is correct.
At Etsy.
Which is a great name. Thank you very much.
Because your grandpa's name is Art.
That is correct.
Okay. That's as good a reason as any. And Sam is very artistic, you'll see. I like the Kiss baby doll head. That's great. Lamp.
The hair does look Amish, though, doesn't it?
We're throwing around.
Sorry.
We're throwing around all sorts of things here. We're off on a tangent.
Oh, if you want to know about the JFK thing, it was, you know, all those documents that were sealed.
Right.
This was the year. You know, it seemed so long, like in the movie JFK, which I love, the Oliver Stone one, you know, like when Garrison was at the trial, you know, it was like, these will be sealed until, you know, it's 2017. Like, so they're just now getting to be unsealed. And so they released a batch of like over 3,369 previously released documents that were unclassified in full and 441 never before seen last week. And basically the CIA had said back during the report that there was insufficient, like they did not fully go into Oswald in Cuba, meeting with the Russians in Cuba. And now they're acknowledging that. And there's like still a living witness, this woman that he met with in Cuba. And she has a role to play in this. That's like the last surviving link to the puzzle.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty, if you're a theorist, it's like the only theory I really like.
Someone, a little bird, was telling me recently that one of Oswald's girlfriends, his girlfriend from Dallas, is still living. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that she is one of these people that sort of hounded to the point that she's on the move and has been.
We could probably get her for an interview, too.
That would be very cool. An interview with Lee Harvey Oswald's girlfriend. On a future episode of Speaking of Strange, if that ain't enough to keep you listening. We mentioned Japan's Sanpaku superstition briefly. We're coming up on the end of the hour, but Sanpaku describes adults who you can see the white beneath the pupil in their eye. Just normally, not with them pulling down their eyelid or anything, but that you can normally look them in the eye and see the white beneath their pupil. That's normal for a child, but not so much in adults. Adults that have the white beneath the pupil of their eye visible generally meet with violent deaths. Abraham Lincoln, a prime example. Joanne Woodward.
Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood. Yeah.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Sanpaku.
Princess Diana.
Sanpaku. Hang on to that thought. We'll be right back with the Dark 30. We can let down our hair. The moon is high and we are lunatics now. It's deep into safe harbor. It's Dark 30. I'm Vance Pollock on behalf of Joshua P. Warren. And now is the time you should turn off your radio if you don't want to hear some potentially outrageous material, because this is when we kick back, down a shot of hard liquor, and try to have some damn fun, and I'll be your creepy guide across the River Styx.
Abandon all hope.
My business is keeping the boys warm. In the studio with producer Sam the Animal Steel, Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine, and investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop and Nevermore Mystical Arts, both at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. How's business, Shelley?
Business is great. Everything's wonderful. The classes are terrific at Nevermore, and I'm just seeing new faces all the time. And as far as the coin shop, if you can't find me at Nevermore, you can always find me in the coin shop because I'm just popping back and forth. The exciting news at the coin shop is that the governor signed the bill to make it so that you can purchase coins, currency, and gold and silver bullion tax-free.
So there is no state sales tax on gold, silver,
or coins, currency? Or currency. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
basically, this is huge.
Basically, anything you sell out of Wright's Coin Shop, people don't have to pay sales tax.
Exactly, except for supplies.
That's pretty nice. So,
that's wonderful.
So basically, that's like a 7% discount on everything, right?
It is.
That's awesome.
Can you sell Confederate coins?
We do have like Confederate currency, yeah.
That's not been declared illegal?
Nope. We have, oh, and Confederate currency is so beautiful. Oh, the artwork is just gorgeous on it.
You have some examples of that there in the shop?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, Greg is into some vintage early American money. He's always posting photographs of coins and things that he's run across. He travels and does the research and the footwork to bring back the goods to Wright's Coin Shop. It's awesome.
He writes articles for the coin journals. I think it's NCNA.
Right, the numismatic, North Carolina Numismatic Association. He's big shot in that. Greg Capps, good guy. And, of course, the Wright family, for which the business is named, and their black sheep daughter, not black sheep, but redheaded daughter. Yeah, that's your LLC is Red Witch. Is that something that should be publicized? It's okay
if people
know that?
It's okay. Yeah, the name of my company is Red Witch Enterprises, LLC. The name of my store is Nevermore Mystical Arts.
Your postman is a friend of mine. Did he introduce himself to you? Jason, the postal delivery guy, because I ran into him before I went to Iceland, and I said I was going to send Shelley a postcard, and you watch for it. Because you'll be the one that delivers it.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you meet Jason? He's a coin collector. He's a big-time coin collector.
Yeah, the guys recognized him as a collector when he comes in every now and then. And then we talked this week, so.
Yeah, Jason's a good guy. And we got to hang out a little bit. He's a big Pink Floyd fan, too. And I just missed a big 50th anniversary of the first Pink Floyd album. They did a tribute show at the Gray Eagle last weekend. Anyway, that was last Saturday, ancient history. But, Jay the postman, who delivers to Nevermore and Wright's Coin Shop down there, is one of us. He's part of the tribe. And hopefully soon enough, Phyllis Galdi will be one of the tribe around here.
I sure hope it's sooner than later.
We're going to do what we can for you. And who knows, Phyllis, maybe there's that person out there who knows just the property, just the place for Phyllis to move with a couple of dogs. She needs a place for those dogs to run. If you got any ideas, maybe you haven't even listed that property yet. Maybe you've got a cabin out in Sandy Mush that you're thinking of listing, hasn't even gone on the market yet. This is the way it happens, Phyllis. It's always synchronicity. It's always the right time. Somebody just switched on their radio in time to hear this. Phyllis Galdi, the publisher of Fate Magazine, is looking to move to the Asheville area. And friends of Speaking of Strange might just have a line on something for you. Can hit me up. Go to speakingofstrange.com. My email address is down there in the little bio blurb, obscurist@yahoo.com. Go to speakingofstrange.com. Go down there by my mugshot and read that blurb, and my email address is there. If you got a lead, a hot lead on a property, we'll check it out. We'll check it out. It might be that it's just what we're looking for, because we're going to settle Phyllis into some fresh digs around here. Phyllis, I won't keep you around too much this hour, but we are going to gradually slide into some unsavory sort of material. We often find, and we've actually got a bell for the occasion, and Shelley's ready with it over there, that these news stories during the Dark 30 hour very often come out of Florida. So when it's a Florida story, we ring the bell, and sometimes that bell rings nonstop.
Sometimes it gets stuck.
From Jacksonville, yeah, we've worn it out. The clapper in that bell is worn down to a nub. From Jacksonville, Florida Chinese food delivery man throws food at robbers, shoots one. Pizza parallels, the pizza parallels. Sam and I often, because Sam and I share a background in pizza delivery, when we were reading stories that we can relate to on a pizza.
How is this a parallel? Pizza parallel?
A Florida man delivering Chinese food to three men who set him up to be robbed threw the Chinese food at them, pulled his pistol, and blasted away. He hit at least one. I've never pulled a gun on anybody while delivering pizza, but I have hit a guy in the face with a pizza when he was threatening me. He said, "You better bounce before I take your money," and I crammed the pizza box in his face.
Dang,
and knocked him down.
You're hard.
Yeah. Jacksonville police said the men called in an order and had it delivered to a vacant house. When the delivery driver showed up, the two men opened the door and shined a green laser in his eyes. He said he could tell the laser came from the bottom of a pistol one of the men was pointing at him. They told him multiple times to come in the house, saying it's over, he told police. But when he turned to run, another man with a gun headed him off. He threw the Chinese food at the third man, pulled his Glock, and fired four or five times. He later told a witness he fired one-handed because he didn't have time to bring his second hand up. He said, "I always carry a Glock, locked and loaded and trained for this, as I read too many stories about the crazy crap that happens out here. I swore would never allow some zombie or crazy person to ever take me out." The man was legally allowed to carry a concealed Glock as he had a valid concealed carry permit. Two of the men have been arrested, police said, and the other is still on the loose. I think a lot of businesses have a policy or, you know, that says that employees aren't allowed to carry guns. But down in Charlotte, I believe it was a couple months ago, some guys went in to rob a Pizza Hut, and the manager pulled a gun from under the counter. And
it's not even a good place to rob.
No, it's not like we got any money.
There's not a lot of money there.
I closed last night and I had $35. Dang. Is it really worth it?
I did know a guy, though, who got that pulled on him when I first started. And I used to be terrified to deliver to certain parts that are now like trendy in the town. But they called in a fake address and he was looking for the number, and it's a really dark street. And bang, out popped two dudes with a shotgun. He was a big dude too, you know, and he was just like, "Hey, just take the $20 bank I have in my pocket or whatever." That's just ridiculous.
Hardly worth it.
Hardly worth it, Vince.
And just to entice Phyllis to move to North Carolina, gunman kidnaps family, forces them to shop at Target in Durham, North Carolina.
That's a very specialized fetish.
The man has been arrested after police say he kidnapped the family at gunpoint and forced them to take him shopping. Durham police say the 29-year-old man knocked on the door of a house in the West End neighborhood asking for money. A resident gave the man money, but police say that he then used a gun to force the residents, a man, woman, and two children, out of the house and into their vehicle. He allegedly made the driver take him to a convenience store, then a Target, where police say Owens forced them to purchase several bags of clothing and gift cards. He said, "We're going shopping, and you're going to have fun, and no one gets shot. Just a fun family outing."
It sounds eerily like a vacation. Like, "We're going to Wally World, and we're going to have a good time."
Sorry, folks. Wally World's closed. The moose out front should have told you. While in the store, a victim managed to ask an employee for help, who in turn dialed 911. Police officers happened to be in the parking lot when the call came in and were able to arrest the suspect without incident. The man is charged with several counts of second-degree kidnapping and robbery with a dangerous weapon. He is also charged in connection with three other robbery cases, two of which involve kidnapping. It's unclear if he has an attorney. It's not much of a story, but no. I think it provides this.
What does it provide, Vance? Tell me it provides something that you didn't
target,
just wait.
A Target instead of a Walmart.
I was thinking the same thing.
At least depends on what you need.
At least it's not poor old Walmart getting picked on this time.
For clothing, I would say Target's your probably your better bet. But
Target
brands for work gloves, Walmart would be your better bet.
I think I'm going to run Phyllis back to her place for... now, because we don't need to keep her out till midnight. So we come up next break, I think I'm just going to run out of here.
Phyllis, do you have any parting words for us in this last minute or so that we have in the segment? What do you got to say?
I think it was a wonderful, enjoyable evening. I'm happy to be here in North Carolina. There are some scary things that have happened in this state, too.
Such as?
One of our staff members was here camping back when he was out of high school, and some scary dude walked up to him in this campground, and he had a bullwhip, and he was going to whip the guy, and he had this really scary look in his face, and some Native Americans picked him up when he was hitchhiking back, and they said it was lucky it was only one of them, so it was some reptilian creature.
You've been dipping back into that ayahuasca you wrote about again?
not me. North Carolina has its secrets.
Oh, yeah. We can all agree to that. Phyllis, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and even greater pleasure to share you with the listening audience of Speaking of Strange, and we'll have you back on real soon. Folks, we're going to take a break. I'm going to shuttle Phyllis out of here, and we'll get back with some more nitty-gritty here on the Dark 30 Hour of Speaking of Strange.